This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. We also stream live at will.illinois.edu. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn this afternoon. And today it's our monthly program on computers and you. Your telephone calls about computers and computing will be invited, so you can join us right now if you'd like. In Champaign-Urbana and vicinity, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-9455. We also have a toll-free number, if it's long distance, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And we have two guests joining us to answer your questions. Both of them are with CITES, which is the Campus Information Technology and Educational Services here at University of Illinois. Debbie Flagger and Jim Eyrick. Debbie is a network engineer. Jim is a wireless network designer. We can talk about hardware. We can talk about software. We can talk about networks, how to get your computer working, Macs, PCs. And the numbers again, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I understand this is your third time that you've been on the
yes.
on the program fielding the questions. Good. So you know the drill, and I know our listeners do too. Why don't we hop right to the telephones and and see what people have in mind. First call is line one, and it's a listener in Urbana. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've been having trouble for the last few months with CITES Express Mail printing out properly. I'm using a Mac, have an HP printer, and it prints far to the right, so I miss about a quarter of the text. And the only way for me to get the email is to put it into, to copy it, put it into a Word document. I emailed CITES, and the person who got back to me suggested some things, but they didn't work for me. One of them was to go under preferences, and the preference that I had didn't list the option he suggested, so I don't know what to do.
Okay, well, as a person that doesn't actually use Express Email, I do use a Mac, and I don't know exactly what they said. This is going to have to jump in off the deep end here. I would guess that they're looking at either a different version of the printer software than you are, or a different version of possibly Mac OS, or a different browser. Hopefully you guys got all on the same page with those, but they may not have access to the same printers and things you do.
Mm-hmm. I'm up to date on everything.
Right, but they may or may not have the same printer driver.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the first thing, which browser are you using to read your mail in? Are you in Safari or are you in Firefox?
Firefox.
Okay.
What version?
What version?
Well, the first issue on the CITES Express Mail webpage, known issue page, is about a Firefox 2.0 on Linux. Now, I don't know if that would be affected on Mac or not, about it not rendering the pages correctly. So maybe trying Safari?
Oh, well, I could try that. Firefox says Mozilla 5.0, and then it says Firefox 3.0.11.
Okay. Right. The built-in Mac browser is Safari.
Mm-hmm.
And you might give that a go. The most recent updates from Apple, update that's Safari 4.0, is that right, Debbie?
Right.
And that one did very well on the web standards testing. Was it the ACID test, I believe?
Yeah, I think it did better than almost all the other Apple browsers have. And I'm pulling up my Firefox here because I know it's up to date and seeing what version it is. I don't usually use Firefox unless I find something that breaks Safari, but
we were told not to use Safari when we had another question earlier. They said to use Firefox.
Well, there are some things that work great in Safari, and there are some things that just didn't work at all in Safari. The newer Safari is better at that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. My Firefox version says 3.0.10, Mozilla 5.0. So I don't think you're very far behind that.
No, I think it was 3.0.11 or something.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's an even newer one. It's not complaining at me, which is...
Yeah, 3.0.11.
Okay, so you're ahead of me. So that is probably not the problem. Yeah, unfortunately, there are some things that work better in Firefox and other things that work better in Safari. So a lot of people are stuck with both. I'd try that real quick. I mean, okay. That should be pretty easy. And that would let you find out if it's a Firefox problem or a problem, say, with your print drivers. And if it works okay in Safari, then maybe the next version of Firefox will fix it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they do say that Firefox 3, they think on the Sites Express webpage that it should actually function.
Right.
So I'm not the Mac person, so I'm going to leave it up to Debbie.
Well, and Debbie doesn't do Express email. And it's probably got as much to do with the printer drivers and the browser all interacting as it does any one piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably what's hard for them to give you suggestions on. Do other things, I assume, are printing just fine, obviously, if you can print it out from a Word document.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, I'll try Safari and make sure I'm up to date. And if it doesn't work, I'll give you a call back.
All right. Good. Yeah, give that a shot. Okay. Thanks a lot. And answering the questions in studio, Debbie Fleiger and Jim Eyrick from Sites here at the University of Illinois. And your questions are welcome at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. This is how it works on our monthly edition of Computers and You on the Afternoon Magazine. Line 2 is calling from Lovington. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a compact laptop that's about 2 years old as of Christmas time, I think 2007. And is special at Best Buy, but having some problems with the power supply on it. The end of the cord has been broke off several times, and now I'm pretty sure we got problems with where it plugs into the PC. There's a little light that comes on, but it doesn't appear that the battery's being charged at all. And I guess I'm pretty sure of my diagnosis. I just wonder, can you get parts for these things, or what do I do about that? I'm just not. If it had horsepower, I could find a part for it. But
for finding computer parts for, I mean, you might just contact HP owns Compaq. You might contact them and see what they can do for you, or go to their webpage and find out. Otherwise, a lot of times I find on older machines when I need a part, because replacing it or upgrade or fixing it is a better option than just replacing the whole machine, is that I just take it apart, find the part number, and Google for that part number. And you'll be amazed the number of computer parts places that basically take in, trade in old laptops that are broke and strip them down to their pieces. I mean, it's like a junkyard for cars, but it's computer motherboards and hard drives and power supplies.
Wow, I thank you.
Yeah, it's a good idea. All right. Well, thanks and good luck with that. Have a good time. Sounds like he's looking for a power supply. I changed one of those out, and I did exactly what you said. Googled it, found it, and had it within a couple of days and was happy. Ivesdale is on line 3. Call from Ivesdale. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and I am on a cell phone, so if my phone drops a call, I apologize. But my question is, on an older computer, say 10 years old, that I've got a lot of records on, is it possible to have it cleansed so that it eliminates a lot of the bogging down that is prevalent now?
It depends, I guess, what we're talking about what you mean by cleansing. In general, just having your hard drive have any information on your hard drive is not going to make the machine run slow unless you've completely filled up the hard drive to where there's not enough room for the operating system to have space for its own processes while you're running programs. One of the options I think we've talked about in the past is just replace the drive, because the prices have fallen so quickly, is that you just buy a new drive that's, if it's 10-year-old machining, probably buy a new drive that's 100 times the size for little money.
Okay. Well, it does show about 45% of capacity left after I defrag it. But I've been told that because of the age of the machine and the interaction of the virus protections, et cetera, that it has collected enough junk that has come in on email messages and so forth that that's what's slowing down the system.
I'm not sure about email messages stuff. I mean, there is a certain time that maybe, and certainly after 10 years, it may be time to just reinstall the operating system. Mostly, if this is a Windows-based operating system, installing programs and uninstalling programs ends up leaving chunks of stuff in the Windows registry that then slow down the system. But as far as just regular data from user data, I would not expect that to normally cause the system to slow down.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, well, good luck with that one. And let's see. Back to line 1. We have a call from campus. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a new Mac laptop. It has a partitioned hard drive. So I'm running some programs on the Windows partition, and it's on the new Vista operating system. And my problem is that sometimes if I try to download a document of some sort, like someone sends it on email or something, it goes into some place that's like a virtual storage, and all I can find is a shortcut for it, and I can't locate it anywhere. It just sort of disappears, and even if I do a search, the folder that I know that virtual thing, that path, just doesn't show up on any searches.
Okay, well, I guess first is, I assume from what you're describing, you're reading your email inside the Windows part, inside Vista. What program are you using to read your mail?
Usually for that, it's on Gmail. But even if someone, if I'm on Yahoo Messenger and someone tries to send me a document on that, it just goes into this virtual place and vanishes. And I know it's there somewhere, but I can't find it.
So you're okay. I want to make sure I get the configuration of the laptop correct. So it's a relatively new Mac laptop.
Yeah, about a few months ago.
The Intel. You have it partitioned with an OS X partition and Vista.
Yeah.
Are you booting into Vista using Bootcamp, or are you using something like Parallels or the VMware product to run Vista inside of the OS X instance?
No, it's Bootcamp.
Okay, so then it's. You're just inside of Vista. You're not running the Mac stuff at all.
Right.
I'm trying to...
It seems to be purely a Vista issue. The way they've somehow set up incoming files.
Okay. So, and what browser are you using when you're? So you're talking about like you were downloading stuff from Gmail.
What? That would be Firefox.
Firefox. So the question is inside of Firefox, there are options to automatically tell it where to download things to, and I'm trying to find it. Because I have mine. I prefer mine that it asks me every time I go to download something, it says, where would you like to download it to? But I know that you can also set it up so it just downloads it as soon as you click it. And it's under, if you go to Tools and Options, and then on the main tab, there's a Downloads. And it says, there's show the downloads window when downloading a file, close it when all downloads are finished. And then you can either have it set to save files to, and you specify a directory. And anytime you save file, it just automatically starts downloading it and dumps it in that directory.
Mm-hmm.
Or, which is the way I prefer it, which is the second option, which is always ask me where to save files.
Okay.
That way I know exactly where I'm putting that file.
Okay. But what if I'm in Yahoo Messenger and someone sends me a file? And what it does is instead of giving me both open and save options, it only gives me open options. And if it's an executable file, I can't open it.
I believe that may be a security part of Yahoo, because in general, there were some issues with Yahoo or with instant messengers in general. I think of people passing around worms executable
right.
files, and so there may be some security options that are set on your instant messenger that say, "Hey, you really can't mess around with executables through this."
Okay.
That might
right.
be something you can change
okay.
carefully.
And I don't. I use Google Talk. I am not familiar with Yahoo Messenger anymore.
Okay, but in general, why can't I do a search and find that virtual path?
Because I don't. Well, I'm not sure it's a virtual path. I'm thinking it's saving it somewhere in maybe the temp directories, and
mm-hmm.
it's possible that your search is not actually. And the temp folders are usually hidden, and. The search, the default search parameters in Windows do not search through for the hidden folders.
Okay.
You can change that. When you do a search, there's an option where you can click and say, go ahead and search through hidden files. So you might
okay.
check that.
I'll look for that. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hope you get that taken care of. Yeah, that can be frustrating. I think I always download everything to the desktop first. Then I know I can find it, and then I can deal with it and put it wherever else I want. So that was my default setting on it. This is the Computers and You edition of the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. And our phone numbers are 217-333-9455. If you're local, it's 333-9455. If it's long distance, 800-222-9455. We'll answer questions about hardware, software, Macs, PCs, and Debbie Fleiger is here, and Jim Eyrick, and they're with Sites. the Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services here at University of Illinois. So if you have any computer questions, if your computer is not doing something that you think it should be doing or you can't figure out how to make it do something, give us a call this afternoon, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. And while we're waiting for the next calls to come in, I should ask, is there anything hot on your minds that you're talking about around your offices that you'd like to share with listeners today?
Well, Debbie and I were actually just discussing ebook readers this morning. I received an early birthday present of a Kindle 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Amazon ebook reader, not their newest one, the Amazon KDX, which is their 9.7-inch screen that does Acrobat PDF files natively, I think was released the 10th, so last week. And there's some other ones. Debbie's been doing ebook or e-read stuff a lot longer than I have.
Well, I went with my Palm. I just had a Palm and read ebooks on my Palm for years and switched over to got a Trio instead of just a Palm as a cell phone combo. And that's where I read my ebooks. I've looked at the e-readers, but I wanted something small. And the ebook readers are all still fairly large, which makes sense. They're about the size of a graphic novel, but it's
for those who need to hold something
pocket.
Physically in their hand,
which is like me. Amazon has the Kindle Reader for iPhone, and then there's a couple other readers for the iPhone, and I didn't enjoy reading on the iPhone screen at all.
Yeah.
So I like the bigger screen.
But Debbie, you don't mind with a smaller screen?
No, it's small. I've always got it with me, and you know, you turn the pages more often, but it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody's a little different in what they like, though.
Yeah.
My husband's got one of the really larger ones that's a few years old called an Iliad. And what's interesting about that is, unlike almost all the ones right now, it uses the e-ink technology to make it look like paper, but you can actually write on it.
Oh, really?
And so it's actually got an interactive screen, and you can store your notes, and you can do Sudokus and do other things like that. So, you know, it's not really a PDA. It doesn't have all that functionality, but it's even bigger than the Kindle. So.
Wow. So it gives those of us who are used to holding the big book or, you know, eventually maybe newspaper-sized thing. And that's one of the things that that I'm about 50-50 now, reading online and still reading the newspaper. But, you know, I was a newsboy when I was a kid, so that was like 50 years ago. And those old habits die hard, you know. But to have something to be able to hold is – now, you know, let me ask you, Jim, since you have the Kindle – is it easy to use? Is it something everybody can figure out?
Yeah, I think Amazon's made it really – you don't even have to have a computer actually to be able to use it. The first one and the second one, or all of them, have a built-in cellular cell phone radio modem built into it that talks to the Amazon servers. So you can actually – once you register it online I'm not sure if you actually have to have at least a computer once to set up your Amazon account, but once you have that all set up, you can order books and then read them all over the Kindle without ever touching a keyboard on a computer.
Wow.
So it's really – you just pick it. It tells you how much it is. You say, sure, I want to buy that, and it downloads it.
Convenience. There you go.
Very.
Technology. Yeah. Great. We have a call on line two from Champaign to get to, so let's do that right now. Line two, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My situation is I just got a I had a Mac laptop and had no problems. I connect through Comcast, and I got a new Dell desktop on Friday. And what's happening is to connect to the internet, and I have talked to Comcast 7 times already, and they have checked everything on their end, the modem, everything is correct. And what happens is it will take me, you know, when I first click on like Firefox or Internet Explorer, I'll get, you know, address cannot be found, you know. And yet, if I try two more times or three more times, then it connects. And I'm at a loss. I'm just wondering, is there anything I need to set or to check in the new computer as to why that would be happening? Because Comcast says from everything they can see on the modem and everything that's transpiring, and they've ran tests and I've, you know, reset and reconfigured and done everything. You know, I don't know why it does that. It's almost like I get the impression it's like it needs to warm up or to have a period of time before it'll connect.
It's the tubes. The tubes have to warm up.
Well,
Well, I think you're kind of right. I mean, what it sounds like is that there's a protocol called DNS, and it takes the name you type in and translate it into a number that the computers use to talk to each other. And when you click on something and it says I can't find it, and you click on it again and it can't find it, and you click on it a third time and it can find it. Uh-huh. Usually, it's that looking up that number uh-huh. is taking a while, and it's not supposed to most of the time. So what that makes me think of is that there's something confused either between your Comcast cable modem and your new computer, that it's giving you not necessarily the wrong address, but maybe it's giving you its address, and then it's having to do it, that it's having to do it two or three times right. instead of just once. So the cable modem or router that you've got, probably you need to look and see that it's set up for what's literally just the three letters, DNS, matches what Comcast says it ought to be. And that also in your computer that you're getting an information in the file in the field for DNS that is matches what the provider says it ought to be. And most providers, I've got AT&T DSL, and they've got a whole web page about what my DNS address should be and what it should be set to, because sometimes it doesn't come through over the DSL router correctly. So they want to have a page where you can have it. And Jim's busily typing. Did you find what Comcast has theirs set to?
Not yet.
And how would I find out what I'm actually set at?
So on a Windows machine, the command prompt?
Okay.
It should be under Start menu. If this is a Vista machine, you can just click on the Start button and type CMD, that's Charlie Michael David, and hit Enter, and it'll bring up usually a black box.
Yes.
And you can type IPCONFIG.
Oh, Lord, I've been through this with Comcast Cable.
Okay,
time.
Well.
And everything matches and works out as, according to them. And I've even spoken to them right this morning, and it's, everything, the modem, everything, and they ran tests as far as, like they said, there's like 10 things they have to, that they sent, and he did it like two or three times because he says sometimes you get false readings, and everything goes okay, and it's almost like, and he suggested actually leaving, it's like I shut down my computer, and then when I go back in, I obviously experience this. But when I left the computer on, like all this morning, and went back, I was able to immediately, search in Mozilla or whatever. So
it's only after you first turn the machine on, and then once that's done, it's good to go, right?
It seems to be. At first, actually, I was having problems. I could Google search, and then when I click on something, it wouldn't come up. And that was, we kind of, addressed that. It seems to, that works, once it's active, it's active. But it's just that almost warming, and I'm not used to that because I never experienced having to have it warm up a little bit.
Does your computer go into standby mode or hibernate when you leave it? Or I guess you're turning it on, and then once it's on, it's working.
Right, it goes on. And that's what I was wondering. I thought, is it maybe set to, like the time frame? Maybe it's too. I don't know if there is anything that you actually time on a computer or not.
Well, it shouldn't. I mean, by the time your computer's done turning on and you've logged in, it should have gotten all that information from your cable modem or your router. Okay. I mean, it's not supposed to take that extra time.
Yeah.
And even if you let it sit there for, let's say, several hours, when you come back to it, it's fine?
Yeah, and I've just experimented with that today, actually, just leaving it on. And when I came back and, did some searches and different websites and all that, I didn't have a problem. So, it's just kind of odd. I don't know. And I just thought, I'd bounce it off you guys to see if
what antivirus do you have?
McAfee.
Okay. It's possible. There are some of the more advanced antivirus programs have things where the browser actually surfs through the antivirus to get to the internet. I'm wondering, we're running out of ideas here, is that if your antivirus is not actually fully running at first, and so your browser, which has been told to surf through the antivirus, then can't surf until that service is fully running.
Okay.
So one thing to try, I would think, would just turn on the machine, and if you have to click to log in, do that, and then leave it alone for 15 minutes or 10 minutes,
okay.
And then go back and surf and see if it surfs right off the bat.
Oh, okay.
And then the other option would be to possibly just for – and I do not recommend leaving it in this state – would be to actually uninstall the antivirus and see if it gets better after that.
Okay. At least there's a couple options. Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good. Thank you much for the call. Yeah. Hope that helps diagnose it. That can be frustrating when you have something like that happening and you can't figure it out. And our telephone lines are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. If you have a computer question, line 3 has been waiting patiently in Champaign. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. We have a custom-built computer running XP-SP3, and it's got so many issues that I could probably take up the rest of today's program and tomorrow's and the day after. So my question is actually, would it be copacetic for me to call the site's help desk and possibly occupy them for hours at a time trying to fix some of the problems we have?
Well, I guess that the first thing is, you know, you're in Champaign, but if you're a U of I employee...
I'm a U of I retiree.
I believe you can use the help desk. And I think they would work with you to decide whether or not how much an appropriate amount of time is. Retirees are also eligible for the site's on-site consulting program, which is a pay to have a consultant come out to your house and help you out. So it might be that they'd be willing to do so many hours for free and then suggest you get that. I don't actually know the service desk policies.
Okay, so I just need to call and ask.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks a lot. And we have a caller on line 1 in Champaign that we'll go to next. Go ahead.
Okay, I have another awkward problem here. I have a Dell laptop. I'm running Windows XP, and for several years I've had a problem. I use Eudora to handle my email, and I've had a problem with Eudora. But I think that the problem is probably in Windows somewhere. When I try to send a message, it'll go out with no problem so long as it's only about 5 or 6 lines long. If it's longer than that, it won't go. And I at one point tried Mozilla's email program, and it had this. Showed the same problem. But if I go on the internet directly to the university and try to send something out there, there's no problem. I can send anything of any size. And in the days when I was sometimes dialing into the computer, I never had any problem there sending out anything. Anything of any size would go out. So what I was having to do is to type up a message and then save it and plug it into one of these other methods. But do you have any idea why I'd not be able to send my messages out?
So who's your service, your internet service provider now?
Let's see. So we have the Comcast cable.
Okay. So when you switched from, I think you said you had university dial-up before, is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you switched from having university dial-up to Comcast cable, did you modify the mail settings, the server settings,
no,
inside of your Eudora?
No.
So when you switch service providers, often your outgoing email needs to go through your service provider's mail servers. So you need to change, and this will be on Comcast's website. They would I'm not sure off the top of my head. A lot of times it's mail.comcast.com or something like that, but we can probably try to find it off their webpage. You need to change inside of Eudora your outgoing email server. Also, it might be called the SMTP protocol mail server.
SMTP?
Yes, for Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, and you want to point that to Comcast web email servers instead of, I assume before you had probably the universities.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, because of spam, web email managers had to make it so that you could only send email from certain – there are rules on when you could send email if you were logged into one of their computer systems on their network, which was the case when you were on dial-up. But then when you moved to Comcast, you're no longer on the university's IP space when you were sending those emails. So that would be one of the – and I assume when you probably ran – when you did the Mozilla email, that you, it probably just imported all your settings from Eudora.
Yes,
so it used the same exact mail server.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll pursue that. Thank you. Yeah,
great. Give it a try, and hopefully that'll solve your problem. We're trying to solve computer problems this afternoon. The Computers and You edition of the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn. And you just heard Jim Eyrick and Debbie Fligers here, too. And they are both with SITES, Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services, here at University of Illinois. We're taking your calls at 333-9455 locally, or if it's long distance, 800-222-9455. We have a caller on line two now, line two from Coles County. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask a couple of questions, if I may. I have an older computer, probably, I hate to admit it, in the 7-8 year range. But, you know, it's working fine in many ways, and yet when it comes to my hard drive, I have two installed, a C disk, which only has 6 megabytes on it, and then my local computer tech. I installed a second one with, you know, 7 megabytes. I don't know why he didn't put in more, but that's what he did. And I have very limited space on the C drive, and I've cleared almost everything off of the F drive, you know, where I put my files and put them onto an external hard drive. So the first question is, can I install a Kodak photo and a printer on the F drive?
The printer would probably be in, the drivers would know. The drivers need to be installed inside of the Windows operating system.
But the software itself.
But the software, if it has monitoring software and stuff, when you go to run setup, it may ask you, it'll probably default it to like C:\Program File something, whatever the printer's name is. You should be able to change that C to F, and then it'll install it on F.
Now how would I, what would be the procedure to go to change it?
So as you run setup for the program or like your Kodak program, you run setup, it'll, one of the screens will pop up and say, okay, I'm going to install this software, and it'll list a path that'll start, most likely it'll start with C:\ and then assuming this is some flavor of Windows, program files / and then usually the name or the manufacturer of that software.
Okay.
You can then just click on it and use your keyboard to delete and change the C from an F.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll see what I can do with that, because I have absolutely no space on my C drive. I can't even defrag anymore.
And see, and that's going to be a problem, is that with no space for the operating system to run, you're going to run into other issues, whether or not you put stuff on the F drive or not. My personal recommendation would be to have a tech replace. Basically, what you can do is you can buy a new hard drive that's bigger than both of those.
Right.
Copy all of the operating system that's on drive C to the new hard drive, and then you expand the drive C partition to fill up the rest of that hard drive. And now you have everything that you had on drive C before, and it's on a really big hard drive with lots of space left over.
And then I just go on from there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In other words, the technician does all that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, because I really believe in the situation of everybody after a couple, 3 years just throwing away a computer. I'm really into the reuse situation.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I wish more. I was over in Terre Haute a couple of weeks ago when they had a recycling drive for tech equipment. It went on for a block.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's terrible.
Yeah, the ones here do too.
But anyway, the situation. Then this Friday, my mouse died. So I went out to our local box store and got a Logitech, which is what I'd had previously, a different model. And I installed it, and the cursor wouldn't move. you know, the little arrow just set in the middle of the screen. So I called the company's line, and they had me get onto the little Windows thing on my keyboard, you know, between Control and Alternate.
Right.
And then use my arrows, and we couldn't get into anything that would do anything. So he said, you think about it and call back tomorrow. So I did, and the next person was much more expeditious, and he told me, he said, why don't you take it to the store and return it?
And have you got another one to replace it then?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
The thing is, do you think it would be defective? Do you think it's something?
Well, it's certainly possible. Is it USB, which is the little rectangular plug, or is it what we call PS2, which is a circular connector?
It's a rectangular.
Okay. You should be able to just mice are one of the things that usually show up as what's called a human interface device, I think. And you shouldn't even have to load drivers to get the normal functionality of a mouse to work on a Windows machine. It's been a long time since I've seen one that I plugged in that it actually said, oh, you need to install software before you can do anything with this.
But 7 years ago you did.
This one has a thing which comes up on the screen to install.
Okay. And what version of Windows do you have?
I previously did have a disk.
What version of Windows do you have?
Of Windows?
Yes.
Windows XP 7.
I would expect that XP would be able to just recognize a mouse and use it.
Unless
that's what I thought, too. But the thing is that the little arrow is just sitting there doing nothing.
Do you have anybody, friend's machine or anything that you can put them, if you don't want to take the, I mean, if you think that maybe it's not defective, you should be able to plug it into another Windows machine, a friend's or perhaps, and see if it.
I don't have any friends that have Windows. They seem to be on something called AOL.
Well, it should be the Windows operating system, though.
Right. Or even a Mac device, a modern Mac computer, plug in a USB mouse, and it should show up and be usable, too. Is that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything I can how do I check, you know, to find out?
Why don't you take it back to the store and have them plug it in a display computer and make sure it works before you take it home?
I don't think they have any set up.
Oh. Well, don't
they? Just sell them in the box.
Well, the other thing, the mouse that you're replacing, was it also a USB connector mouse, or was it one of the round PS2 mice?
It was the USB.
Okay.
It was a little longer, you know, what you plugged into the back of the tower.
Have you tried any of the other ports?
The other
I
USB
only have
ports?
Two.
Yeah. Okay.
And it won't work at either of those?
No. Well, the one is already occupied.
Well, you can always unplug them and switch them just to see.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm going through computer withdrawal right now.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that'd be a take it back and make sure the store makes sure it works before you take it home. And yeah.
Well,
see.
That's what I told the people at LogTech.
Yeah.
You know, I said, you know, this thing was in a box. Of course, it had a 2007 copyright on it, and it even changed the tech telephone number since they'd written up their brochure. But other than that, they're very nice people.
Yeah. We'll take it to another store and have them plug it in their
computer.
There
is no other store.
Oh. You're in Coles County. That's right. Your choices are probably limited.
The word county is very important.
Okay. Well, good luck with it. I don't know. I'd keep hammering on their tech support.
Yep.
So, yeah, I've got a
10-year-old computer that runs Windows 98, and I just put a USB mouse on it, and it just worked.
You don't surf the internet with that, do you?
Yeah.
You haven't listened to Debbie and I's other shows, then.
Oh. I'm going to find out after this what's up. Well, I don't know. I guess call back tech support, and then wait another month and call back here if you don't get it working. All right?
A month.
Well, good luck. I guess hammer the tech support, all right? Good luck with it. We've got a couple of more calls we need to run on to here. One in Champaign County on line 3, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a Mac fellow, but my parents have a relatively old XP machine, and I keep getting the alert that I need to put SP3 on. Now, I've put SP2 on And I think I remember having to go to a CD to, as a source, because I think I had trouble getting it. But the online installation for SP3 should be quite a bit easier because it's not as big. But I can't remember what the alerts are, but I get a certain distance, almost completely install it, and then it aborts. So I'm wondering, for one, my parents aren't high users, so I don't know that the SP3 is all that critical for anything. I've turned off the firewall and the virus and SpyBot and all that stuff, so I was told that that's probably necessary, but it just still doesn't install. So should I install it, and what would you suggest for doing it?
Well, if you can get it to install, it's certainly, I mean, there's not just fixes in there, there's exploit patches and things that are rolled into the service packs, so it's a good thing to have it. There's a thing called the Service Pack Network Installers. Let me see if I can find it. So basically, it's the entire, in case this problem is that your download of the install is being interrupted, is that you can actually download the entire service pack ahead of time to your hard drive and run it from local instead of using the network installer.
That sounds like a great idea.
And let me see if I can try to find that. So it's called the Windows XP Service Pack 3 Network Installation Package for IT Professionals.
It gets confusing because they use the word network for doing it locally because they want you to download it to your local network, put it on a server, and run it over your local network.
Right. So it's for guys that are supporting computers in an enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's a 300 or so megabyte file. And that's actually quite often that's the way I download that. I'll download the service packs via the network installation package to my USB key. That way when I go to my customers, we don't have to wait for it to download from the internet. I can just plug it into the computer, copy it over, and start the install.
I have installed an extra disk drive, so would you suggest that I put it on the other non-boot up drive and install it from that? Or
I don't know that it would matter. I mean, the one thing I guess to check is that how much available space is available on drive C?
There's plenty.
Okay, I mean, because when you're installing one of these service packs, so you have 300 megabytes for the download, and it has to expand all that. So you're probably looking at maybe a gig free space that you need in order to install one of these service packs. You could certainly if you put the download onto the other drive, that would save you some space. But if it's not, if the regular drive, the operating system drive, isn't full or near capacity, then it shouldn't really make a big difference.
Okay.
So it's just look for the network installation pack for IT professionals.
Right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And somebody called in and said to the guy with the problem with the mouse, try rebooting, which sometimes helps. We have one more call. It's from Urbana. Let's try to sneak it in. Line one, go ahead.
Hello. I have more of an annoyance than anything else. It's with Firefox mail program.
Would that be Thunderbird?
Yeah, Thunderbird. I don't know why I had a mental block right there. Happens occasionally. Anyway, it doesn't fully download my mail from the site's server.
That is an option. Under the settings?
No.
Oh.
It's set to do that.
Okay.
But it unloads maybe half the mail on the server and then stops, and I have to tell it to go out and get mail.
How many messages do you have in your inbox?
I might have a month. Probably 600-700 messages. Is that too much?
I don't know. I try to keep mine under 100.
It's
my personal goal every day to leave work with less than 50 in my inbox.
Oh, you should work on my inbox for me.
I will. It's called trash.
Me too.
Well, I don't want to trash them, but
I'm a filer. So
yeah,
I probably have 600 folders that I file everything into.
Well, you're ahead of me. I've probably got 100.
Well,
I'll try that then and try to cut down to a week rather than a month.
And the other thing, if you're only, and I don't know, are you using POP or IMAP?
POP.
Okay. And do you have it set, and so you, if you're using POP, none of the messages should be left on the server when you're done. You might try, make sure that you have that set. So in Thunderbird, There's and other mail programs. When you use POP, it actually says delete or leave on server when you're done. In my opinion, leaving messages on the server when you're using POP is a bad idea. If you need to leave messages on the server, you should switch to using IMAP.
Well, it also depends on how long you want to leave them.
Yeah.
Right.
A day or two is probably not a big deal. A month is a lot.
Yeah.
And then you could go into, so like kind of start from scratch to make sure you have all your mail downloaded to Thunderbird, and then go use the Express web login to clear everything out once you confirm that you have it on your machine.
Yeah. I could do that. I occasionally like to be able to read my mail from somewhere else.
And I understand that, and that's why I would investigate, and I use IMAP for that exact reason, because I use my UVI mail. I read it from my iPhone, from my home computer, and from my work computer. Mm-hmm. So I switched over to using the IMAP protocol, which is designed to let you leave your mail on the mail server.
It is.
Yes.
There you go.
And then you go in occasionally and delete everything.
Or you download it to the folders that you have on your local computer, and then they're removed from the inbox.
All right.
Oh, okay, I see.
All right. Well, good. We'll give that a try. Thank you. All right. We got to scoot. For the record, I have 4,300 emails in my inbox there. And thank you very much to Jim Eyrick, who just rolled his eyes, and Debbie Flieger for stopping by from CITES, which is the Campus Information Technologies and Educational Service. I'm Jay Pierce, Henry Frain, our technical director, and this has been the Computers and You program on the Afternoon Magazine. We'll do another in a month.